Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. How are you? This is episode number 133. It's the end of October. And you know what? It is pretty scary, not only for Halloween, but these markets have been absolutely horrible in the last week. It really started coming at us the end of last week, but we're going to talk about that a little bit and why some of the reasons are that the market is acting this way and what you may want to do to protect yourself. We're also going to have a nice discussion with my good friend Fausto Puglisi, the professional trader, talking about some of the things that I want to know. Let's see. I guess I want to know what is going on in the world of trading, maybe some flash trading discussion. I want to know about what's happening, what you do in these kind of conditions of the market as a trader, and maybe some of the new equipment that they have that's out there. There's always something new about out there. But you also need to know this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. You get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Just go to log on at, it's very easy. It's Audible. What is it now? Hold on a second. I'm going to get this for you because they have a new one that they gave me recently. Let's see. Audible pod. It's the same, actually. I thought it was different. AudiblePodcast.com/investor. You can get your free audiobook. We'll talk a little bit about that during this episode. All right, so what happened? What happened was that we had great earnings. I mean, did you see the earnings from the last couple of weeks of Apple and Google and Alcoa and Intel? And I mean, all the names that came out were pretty good. I mean, if you look at the comparison of what the expectations were as compared to what they actually came out on the earnings, and also on when it looked like revenues were really going to be dropping off. They did, but they kind of were still stable. But again, one of the things that investors have been looking at very closely over the last 6-9 months has been, you know, how do earnings compare to what analysts expect? Now, I wrote this. This is kind of interesting. We wrote about this in a recent update. And one of the things that's happening here is that the expectations of analysts are prepared prior to earnings, right? So we know that analysts on average say that, you know, XYZ company has 37 cents a share. That's what they're supposed to give out, you know, supposed to earn, and X amount of revenues. Well, what's interesting is, have we noticed that companies have miraculously beat by a penny, 2 pennies, 5 pennies, or, you know, 25 cents on the EPS number, but coming under on revenue? Well, what's interesting about that is revenue can be recognized in different terms, of course, whether it's in this quarter or next quarter. But, you know, the companies have advanced knowledge and they have an indication of what they have to beat. In other words, they know the hurdle that they have to, you know, move over. Or as one person said, it's kind of like a pole vaulter that, you know, kind of has a very low hurdle to have to pass. Now, what's interesting about that, what we need to know is that what has changed? We have to ask ourselves, what has changed? And as disciplined investors, we have to say, well, you know what? When all of a sudden we have sentiment changing, when we have decent economic numbers here, when we have some bad ones there, and we'll talk about some of those in a moment, when we see that when earnings are coming out, companies are doing very well, and then they're coming down. Just look at Alcoa. As a matter of fact, I'll put a chart on the website of this episode, and I'll show you both this and last quarters, and maybe even the quarters before. Look at Alcoa on earnings day and what happened. Stock went up, and they beat, and it was great. And they talked about how, you know, they're starting to ramp up production a little bit, and they're actually showing that there's more demand. They mentioned the word China. That's always a good one to bring up a stock. And then all of a sudden, the stock goes up dramatically and then comes back a little bit during the next day after the overnight. And then it kind of trades sideways. And then as the market starts to move a little bit against stocks in general, Alcoa comes down dramatically. As a matter of fact, on Wednesday of this week, there was about an 8%, 8.5% drop on Alcoa. That's a rough day. What happened? What changed? The story didn't change, did it? Not as far as I can tell right now in terms of Alcoa. It's only a couple of weeks ago that they actually presented their earnings. So what has changed? Well, sentiment has changed clearly, but why? Well, one of the things that's happened is we're finding that many of the economic numbers that are coming out are not as thrilling as they could be. Last Friday, we saw sentiment, consumer sentiment come out, and it was actually pretty rotten. The conference board's number, it was pretty ugly. And that's kind of interesting when we think that there's a recovery at hand and all of a sudden we're seeing, you know, all of a sudden we're seeing there is a drop off on consumer confidence. Now, let's look at that. We call that oftentimes a leading indicator. How consumers feel is going to lead to them in the future. We can find out, we can extrapolate what's happening in the future with that. So as a leading indicator, what does that tell us? Well, if consumers aren't feeling good about their current or their future expectations of maybe their jobs or their financial picture, they're probably less likely to spend on whatever. We also found that the GDP came out and it was really, you know, trumpeted as just this amazing thing. And let's step back for a second. GDP, gross domestic product, was supposed to be about 3.2%. That was the average analyst, economist number. When you look at all the different numbers that are brought together by either Bloomberg or Thomson, it was about 3.2% growth quarter over quarter. Okay. Now, obviously, we know it's coming from a low base. And what helped it? Well, cash for clunkers was a huge help. The home buyer's credit, the $8,000 that recently looks like it may be extended, was a huge help. Without those, it would be about a 1.7% number. Well, just a few days before that, in a surprise move, Goldman Sachs came out with a reduction of their estimate. They thought it was going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.7%. That shocked the markets. Tuesday was a rough day on the markets. As a matter of fact, when I looked at my screen of stocks that we track and markets and indices and indicators, I said, my God, it looks like September 2008. There are stocks all over the place, particularly in the materials area, down 8, 10% just in one day. Amazing. On top of that, because we started to see this pressure, the dollar has been actually turning. Just when everybody thought that the dollar was going to fall off a cliff, the dollar started turning up. And it started moving and getting stronger. The yen is getting stronger. So the two real core base currencies, and there's a euro, of course, too, but the two core base currencies of the world are starting to strengthen because there's a concern about where the market is going from here. Whether it's, when I say the market, I'm talking about S&P, NASDAQ, I'm talking about the world markets as well. But we're really focusing on U.S. for a moment, but the world markets as well. Why is it that South Korea, who really came out with a great GDP number and some really good confidence numbers, is getting hurt, is rolling over? Why is it that India is getting hurt? What happened with Brazil last week? Now, we talked about Brazil. We talked about how there's a 2% tax on foreign capital coming in. But in addition to that, their economy is doing very well, generally speaking. Well, a lot of this has to do with the fact that there's a concern that that many countries around the world are going to slow down on their stimulus. Japan announced that they're going to stop buying corporate debt. We know that Australia started raising their rates. And there's been talk around that the rates are going to be rising or the stimulus is going to be slowed down to see what happens. And if, in fact, we look at the GDP number of this week and we see that, well, the GDP number was 3.5, but if you pull out the stimulus-related, it may be only 1.7, that's not a very swift recovery. A lot of people who believe there's going to be a V-shaped recovery, well, we're not sure that's going to happen. As a matter of fact, we are looking at a W. If you can picture a W for a moment, right? You have a down, which we've seen already, then an up, like we're having a kind of a turn, and then another down. Why? Well, if you look at a lot of the stimulus spending, you look at a lot of things that have gone on and you compare the economies on a period-to-period basis, obviously, as you all know, because we've used this term to death, that the economy fell off a cliff last year, the fourth quarter of 2008 into the first quarter of 2009. Well, now mathematically, we look at how the markets and the economy have reacted, and we see that the economy has been brought up dramatically as compared to the time when they dropped off a cliff. So in other words, kind of think about the dead cat bounce that we talk about. We could look at that from an economic standpoint too. And that means that, and the dead cat bounce is, if you know, a dead cat is horrible, sorry. If a dead cat is thrown off from a high enough point, it will bounce also. Awful, I apologize. But that's the saying in the industry. And the economy is turning from a very low base. It's happening all around the world, except for maybe China and some of the Asian areas. It's a little bit different. We have to have a different discussion about that. But generally speaking, it's a very tough environment. Now, while you're hearing this, add to this discussion, the dollar is strengthening, materials are coming down. There's been some very big concerns about the banking industry again. Downgrades by Dick Beauvais earlier in this week. Last week or the week before was Meredith Whitney, who downgraded or at least took her piece off of Goldman, who's now trading below their 50-day. They're trading below their 50-day. And now we're hearing, by the time you hear this, it should be confirmed, that CIT Group, the largest lender for small businesses, is going to be declaring bankruptcy. Whether or not they do a prepackaged bankruptcy or any other kind of bankruptcy that they may dream up, they are talking about filing bankruptcy by this weekend. This is something that they've been able to postpone for a while. As a matter of fact, Goldman Sachs was able to restructure their, I think it was upwards of a $2.9 billion debt and bring down the debt load, and kind of restructure that a little bit. But that's right before now we see a time when they're looking like they're going to actually file for bankruptcy. Now, that's going to be interesting because the small businesses that rely on them for whether it's the copier, and again, the lease on the copier or maybe even a build out. So we're talking about small to mid-sized businesses. What are they going to do? Credit's tight already. Did you hear the story that Citigroup one day last week put the kibosh on gas cards? What do I mean by that? Well, if you were one of those lucky folks that went over to a bank, used a Citibank gas card and went to a gas station and you put it in and you tried to get gas, you couldn't. They were no longer accepting the cards anymore. Any card that had Citigroup on it, with most of the retail gas stations, weren't accepting it. They were shut down. That's not a good sign. We looked at indicators last week. As a matter of fact, you should look at this. We posted and we're going to maybe do this because a lot of people had a lot of interest in this. We posted something called Indicators We're Watching, and we put that on the website. And these are the indicators from like the McClellan Index, the up-down ratios, the NASDAQ, the volumes on the New York, the NASDAQ. We look at various bond interest rates. We're looking at the dollar, all these different things. I'll put a post up there before the weekend is out so you can see it. And take a look at that over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. But you know what? What we did last week was we used our discipline and we started pulling a lot of positions that were very volatile. So last week we started we had shorts on our portfolio in Wynn, in AutoZone, on Fiserv. Wynn's numbers came out. They were horrible. Dropped down. We covered the short for about a 9 or 10% gain. We did the same thing with AZO when it dropped. And then Fiserv, only a small gain on Fiserv, maybe about 3.5%. But in many of our other positions, we started to see that there was some leakage happening in the portfolio. And we saw the volume was picking up dramatically on the markets. On the down days, we call those distribution days. And these distribution days were adding up dramatically. And that was a sign that something was wrong. So while we added a couple of positions just very lightly, we also started pulling things off the table. We pulled a quick position that we traded in the educational firms that we did for a quick bounce, and we just moved in and moved out, small profit, and that was it. Some of our core positions we started selling. We took the profits on things like Sears. There was a little bit of loss on WMS. We took half of our country positions down on Brazil, India, and China. In other words, we cut the position in half, all those positions in half, earlier in the week. And we also started to cull through the portfolio to find things that were showing excessive volatility and said that we would rather see some profits taken. You know, we'll just take the profits now and set aside. And then what happened was, of course, Wednesday hit, and we were very glad we didn't get involved in that whole mess. You know, everybody got hurt there, but nothing major. Thursday came, and the markets did a turnaround, but I was very interested that there was a very low-volume turnaround. So right at the close on Thursday, at the high of the day, we put a position of RWM, the ProShares, Russell 2000 short. We put over a 10% position on the portfolio as a hedge. So right now our portfolio is, just to let you know where we're sitting right now as an example, somewhere about maybe 40% net long, 10% short the small caps, and then we have alternative assets, whether it's agricultural, gold, things of that nature. We have also we're long the dollar. Now the double inverse against the euro, which is paying off nicely in this environment in the last number of days. Profitable on that. So these are the kind of things that you want to think about in this environment. If you're sitting there in a buy and hold strategy that so many were probably getting back more comfortable with after we decided never to do it again, you know who you are. This is the time you really need to think about if that's a smart way to go. You know, because this is the time that where it gets very concerning in this environment. And I got to tell you something, it's not a place that you want to end up just holding on forever again. And what there's nothing wrong with taking some profits at this point. We also saw additional information that I just want to share with you on the economic front. You know, on the earnings front, they were fine earnings, but again, we're really concerned. We wrote a piece this week that we do for our clients, our quarterly economic commentary and review. And we talked about how, you know, is this the time where if we're seeing a W in the second half of 2010, that is this the time where we're going to see the markets reacting to that so far in advance because they're an advanced indicator? You know, in March, they saw that things were going to start recovering a little bit more, it seems. And is this now where they're going to see that W happening? And if so, what do we do to protect ourselves? So, you know, you got to think about hedging. You got to think about maybe some options shorts. You got to think about raising cash in this kind of environment and not just going after everything. As we see right now, Thursday was a head fake. It was a bull trap, not a bear trap this time. It was a bull trap for what happened the next day. And while the markets were only down a couple of percent or so on Friday, the fact of the matter is that individual stocks really got slammed, particularly in the material sector. The banks are getting hurt because it's additional concern. Just look at Bank of America. Just look at that one. I mean, that was 19. It's, I don't know, 15 or under right now. That's the story right now. So you got a lot to look at right there. We're going to put some information on the disciplinedinvestor.com inside of this show notes. And also I'll put a link to indicators that we're watching. And you know what we'll do right now? We'll take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk about Audible for a minute. And then we'll talk to Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University about, you know, what's going on in the trading world. Big following on the show. People really like him. So we brought him back. So hang on. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And back we are on the Disciplined Investor Podcast with Fausto Puglisi, one of my favorite guys, a good friend of mine. He's the founder and one of the lead teachers and professors, if you will, at Cyber Trading University. If you haven't done so already, you got to check this out because I say this all the time. Fausto, how are you, by the way?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
I always talk about this, that the first time I remember ever seeing your classes that you did many years ago, you would do an online class where you do like a WebEx meeting and all that, or go to my PC, which is, of course, our client. So that's, I shouldn't say our client, but our sponsor, one of our sponsors. And, you do this interactive web thing and you were trading live. And I was like, this guy is teaching and trading live. It's kind of like somebody teaching you how to drive, but at the same time, them driving at the same time you're driving. And, you know, how do you do that? And they're watching you the whole time. And it scared the crap out of me. I'm like, this guy's going to lose so much money. He's not watching. But
well, you know what it is, Andrew? A lot of people try to go out there and they want to learn how to do this. And one thing that I always learned is before I was a trader, I was a broker, and I never, I was never able to figure out how these markets trade, and no one would ever show you this stuff. And the only way you're going to sell me to prove to me that you know what you're doing is to put your money where your mouth is. And that's one thing that I do. Like, I just came back from Toronto last week, at the World Money Show, and I did a whole event on trading live with Fausto, and I was showing people time and time again, market make a trap, look at this. I mean, it was funny, Andrew. Everybody was saying the market was going one direction. I said, you know what, you're all wrong, you're going to lose, and the market went the other direction, because people understand that, there's a certain, way the market trades, and it's only a game, that's all it is. You just need to try to play that game, and I show that, and it's quite exciting. I really do enjoy doing it, so I don't think I'm going to lose all my money. Right. And if I do lose, it's not bad, Andrew, because at least I show people why I lost money. You can explain it to them so they don't make those mistakes.
Well, let me ask you something. When it comes to trading these days, when you look at the traps, we talk about this. I want everybody to envision for a minute the whole idea of level two trading, which is basically a lineup on the left side of all the people and traders and investors and wirehouses and people bidding for a stock. And on the right side, it's all the people that are showing the ask. In other words, they're selling the stock, or at least that's like they want you to believe. Now, what I've noticed, though, Fausto, is over the last year or so, and I don't know if this is because of the flash order trading or what it is, but I think we know this, that a lot of professionals are hiding behind trades in the ECNs, the ARCAs, the Instanets, or whatever is out there these days. But what's interesting that I noticed is that, and people probably don't know this, when you see a stock and they just see the bid and the ask, and there's maybe 100 to buy and 200 to sell, when I buy a stock, if I don't want to push it up, I do a show-only order. So, for example, if I'm buying 1,000 shares of ABC stock, and I don't want to push the stock, maybe it's a little thinly traded, I'll show that I'm only willing to buy really 100. So everybody that's looking at me, it's invisible for, but I'm doing a 100 buy, and then my system will automatically refresh the trade and automatically keep selling the 100 or buying the 100, whichever one it is. So that's going on. I think people need to know about that.
Well, and you're right, and it's amazing because when I was pointing that out last week, everybody knows that there's something going behind closed doors, and they're like, well, you can't trust these people. And that's right, but you should know why not to trust them. You need to know how to play
it's
that
poker.
Game.
It's poker.
And you know what's so scary is that I was doing a speaking and showing people the ECN book, which you're talking about, which is like another level two, where here you are saying that you will post 100 shares on the bid and sell 1,000 on the offer. Well, meanwhile they're using their ECN book, which is I show you in my class, and we'll tell everyone about the free class. I'll show them live and see how they do it. They'll go out there and put 20, 50, 100,000 shares, which is something I showed you, another way of getting around it, to hide orders, mm-hmm. which people don't have, and brokerage firms don't even offer it because they don't want them to know about it. Because then people get, what happens is now people are going to start asking questions, and they're going to know why they didn't get it. But as a trader, I can't see any way not trading. It's like trading blind.
Right, exactly. Hey, let me just take a quick break. I want to mention something because, you know, we have these sponsors for the show, Fausto. Hey, do you ever listen? I know you listen to podcasts and all. Do you listen to audiobooks ever?
Once in a blue moon.
All right. Yes. Well, the blue moon's going to start today because, you know, our sponsor is audible.com. And this is, I think this is so cool for all of us that are on the go. You know, how do you listen to stuff? How do you know? I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, reading takes time. You can't read when you're driving, by the way. I'm not sure if you're supposed to be listening to anything either. But, you know, in your ears. With the iPhone or your MP3 player, you could download amazing amounts of things. Matter of fact, Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere. And just like, you know, you can listen to the Disciplined Investor podcast. So all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/investor, and you get a free audiobook download of your choice. And I'm listening right now to the last lecture, which, you know, this is a story about a gentleman who had terminal cancer, had 6 months to live, and he was actually a professor, and he gave this last lecture and what he would want to tell his kids all in this one lecture, and it's extremely moving. It's hard to get through a little, you know, like a half hour of it without getting all choked up. So I don't know, but you know, I listened to Ben Mesrick's book. I've listened to books on from biographies. I love biographies. The Second Coming of Steve Jobs was an amazing. Have you ever read that book, The Second Coming of Steve Jobs?
I read his first one.
Oh man, this is a good book. I liked it. Anyway, you can get those, and matter of fact, you can get them free. All you have to do is log on again to audiblepodcast.com/investor, and you get a free audiobook, and it's pretty easy. And in fact, if you want to get my audiobook, The Disciplined Investor, it's up there too. So that I know you've read, Fausto.
Of course, I endorsed it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's a great book.
Thanks. Listen,
I'm actually even in it too.
So. You are. So let me.
Right.
You know, so that's funny because if for those of you who don't know how I know Fausto is that many years ago when you know I'm a professional investor and I was looking for a way. This is something that we'll kind of explore because I think this is something people need to know. I was looking for a way to sharpen my investing skills in terms of my buys and my sells. In other words, we could buy, this is before all the newfangled things we have today in a way, but you know, this, I was looking for something that can help me when we're buying and get the best pricing and best, you know, when we're selling something, the best pricing for our clients. Because when we trade, we're not trading 100 shares. We're trading a lot of shares. And I wanted to see what kind of platforms were available, what kind of techniques were available, and I wanted to sharpen the saw. If anybody reads Stephen Covey, you know about sharpening the saw. You need to continue educating. So I went and I found Fausto, and we've become good friends. So Fausto, you know, I mean, back when it was an eye opener. I got to tell you, even for a professional.
And it was back in 1999.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Or 2000.
Yeah, it was a while. Yeah. It was a while ago. This is again before a lot of the things that we have today are even available.
Right.
You know. So, what's new these days, though? Give me an update. You know, take me back. I've kind of done your classes before, but take me, and I've done them recently to refresh. But take me all the way to today. What's different on the ECNs? Aren't there less ECNs now?
Wait.
Don't answer that. Tell everybody what an ECN is.
That's even a better thing. Well, back in 96, I was one of the original day traders who started the industry. And what happened was market makers were having a problem. I mean, the exchanges, NASDAQ, was having a problem with market makers because it was them to dictate the price. Not the CEOs of the companies that were public, none of it. I mean, whatever the brokerage firm wanted to, they dictated the price. So But what happened was Nasdaq didn't like the idea of them having full control of them. So they had to come out with a tool, another way for other people to dictate the price of the stock. So that's where ECNs were born. So what an ECN is, it's the abbreviation is Electronic Communication Network. You're electronically networked into a company that's going to let you become a market maker. So you could actually become Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, Shearson. And the power of an ECN, when you look at a level two, and it's funny because all you listeners out there will tell you how you can actually attend one of my free seminars. I'll show you live, and you could see it because it's really kind of hard to explain it. But it's to the millionth power when you watch it live.
Right.
You can actually see your order get posted out there and outbid Goldman, Merrill, Shearson. It's all real time. It's like you're driving a car.
So you're dating yourself with Shearson, by the way.
What's that?
Is Shearson even around anymore?
Well, not really.
You're dating yourself. Why don't we just talk about E.F. Hutton?
No, Bear Stearns not there anymore.
No, but don't they still post under that? They don't have that anymore?
No, they do. They still post at it.
Right, they still post underneath. Yeah.
Right.
So the ECN to like Archipelago. There was INET for a while.
Island.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's Island. There was Brute. There was Bloomberg had one. I mean, they all got gobbled up. Nasdaq actually allowed all these ECNs to be out there, and they end up buying them all back themselves.
Right. But what these ECNs are is just another trading platform. For example, if you want to trade IBM, you can do it through the New York Stock Exchange auction system, which is less of an auction than it used to be, or you can actually trade it on an ECN.
Arca.
Yep. You can trade it on Arca.
ECN like Arca. Right, and meanwhile, these people don't realize the ECNs are so powerful. I mean, here you are competing. If I told you I'm going to compete against Microsoft, you'd be like, yeah, to your damn mind. Well, look what happened to Google, okay?
Right.
Archipelago bought the New York Stock Exchange. That's how big these ECNs became. So now everybody's trading through these ECNs because it's a lot less expensive. It's more of an honor system. It's more policed. They don't have to police it in other ways. So that's the way technology is going today. And it's amazing, Andrew, and for everybody out there, but I can almost guarantee you that 90% of the people that are listening right now probably don't even know this existed. Or I always hear people say they heard about it, but never even seen in real action. And you should come to my class for free, and I'll show it to you in Live in the Market how it really does work.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's cool, but not only is it cool, you need it, Andrew.
Well, I know. If anybody's trading out, let me kind of set the stage for you a second, and then I want to talk about some things that you see changing. Let me set the stage. So you're an investor out there that wants to trade, and you want to get your feet wet, and what happens? You go to an E-Trade account, let's say, or something like that, and you enter your order on a web-based platform, perhaps. Maybe it's something a little bit more sophisticated than that, and you don't exactly know what price you want to get. How do you know what the support and resistance levels are? Okay, you may know that too. But if you're going to, we're talking about day trading here. We're not talking about trading and buying and holding forever. We're talking about day trading. The opportunity for you to lose money is enormous if you're going to use traditional trading mechanisms. And why are we talking about day trading? Well, day trading or scalping or even swing trading is all part of diversification. I do believe that. I believe that when you have a portfolio, if you want to have a portfolio of, let's say, mutual funds, okay, fine. You know, whether it's something I endorse or not, it's different. Well, you want that, that's fine. You want a portfolio that you trade a little bit in swing trading, maybe some ETFs, go short, go long, fine. But at the end of the day, one of the things you also need is you need to have diversification across different trading philosophies, if you will. And it's important. You know, when we manage money, let's fast forward, when we manage money for clients, right? So we may like a stock, we buy a stock, and we hold it to a certain price point, whether it's a sell stop, we're going to move out of it potentially, or whether it's going to be for an upside gain of X amount. You know, we say that this is the top end of a price of a stock. Okay, fine. We may also swing trade, right? And you saw recently.
I've seen all your trades. Yep. I watch your trades all the time. You post them up there, and not some people do that. You have some great trades. I mean, listen, and let me tell you something. Some of these other funds out there, other traders, I would be embarrassed with what they have up there.
I mean,
it really is.
Yeah.
But
that's one of the things we do, too. I mean, how many people do you know that post that kind of information?
Very, very few.
Right. Our clients see it all the time. Every week, our clients see it.
It's like me. It's like me, Andrew. I do the Traders Challenge. There's not one school that still wants to compete with me because they're embarrassed that they're going to lose. I mean, even though I'm a seven-time champion, but people also, other schools are embarrassed because they don't want to make themselves look bad out there. But that's the only way people build confidence in you, Andrew and me to be their mentor to teach them how to do it, and that's what people really need. If someone can't put their money where their mouth is, you better run far, far away as you can.
Yeah, I hear you. So what's new in the world of trading, though? I mean, so we know, you know, you teach one of your core things about traps. So tell me, explain to me what's new, what's going on. I mean, volatility is up again. The VIX is over 30 now. It was 20 last week. The VIX, the volatility fear index, if you will, or the expectation of short-term volatility is up by 30. That's a large number. 20 is large. 30 is very large, even though it was 80 at one time. So you're seeing a lot of volatility here, right? A lot of traders have been playing like AIG, and they've been playing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which I think is nuts. But okay, if you're just day trading it, is that something that you've been doing?
I've been day trading a lot more. I've actually been sitting on the sidelines as much because I was getting really spooked on the rally because I knew we were coming to this major resistance level of 10,000. I just did a speaking, like I said, in Toronto regarding did we peak out at 10,000? And I went through it. And your listeners, what you should do is draw a trend line, go back all the way to 2,000. If you just take all your indicators, just leave it a candle. Just leave it as a bar chart. You'll see that there's a major support resistance level right at 10,000, and you could obviously see it. Were we just talking about, Andrew, that this is the first month that we're going to be down since March?
Yeah, no, I think this is the first official month. NASDAQ and the S&P, and I think the Dow is the first time it's been down since March. I mean, and that's pretty rough. This week was very rough. We're talking about, you know, what, 3.5-4% between the various markets here. And then you look at things like Brazil moving up and down 6% in the last few days. I mean, there is some real volatility. And a lot of this is based on the dollar. I talked about earlier before.
Dollar got crushed.
The dollar got crushed. But then it came back. It's coming back. That's what's really hurting. What really is troubling me the most is that the small move on the dollar moving back up is killing commodities, absolutely obliterating them. You look at, I talked about this earlier, you look at Alcoa, 8% day. You look at things like, you know, the energy companies. I mean, just getting killed, absolutely killed. And we're talking about only a small move on the dollar comparatively from where it was. And it's taking these things down 8, 10, 12, 15%. Look at the steel companies. Oh, you look at the steel companies.
I know, but you know what's so funny? The more that people listen to what you have to say, and the more involved they get, the more you understand that trading ends up being more like a game, and you just know that. Yeah, you hear, like, you can get sick over this, but for somebody like me, I go gaga over this.
Yeah,
it's like an opportunity,
right?
Because the volatility is what you need,
right? But some of the things right now, I got to tell you something. Some of the volatility we saw this week is concerning even me. And the reason for that is that we saw a lot more selling on much higher volume than we've seen in the past. And the buying on Thursday was bought at much lower volume. That's always a big concern. I talked about that earlier, too. But what's really concerning to me is that they're dropping some of these stocks down 5 and 6 and 7 and 8% in a day. Now, we've seen that before on earnings announcements and all, but I'm talking about a wide range of stocks. So how do you do something like that? How do you warm up in the morning? Now, we're talking about day trading, different than investing for a moment. How do you warm up and figure out what you're going to be buying? Or selling?
Well, first what I do is, obviously, just like you, I tweet. I'm on Twitter myself. So I'll basically tweet. I'll let people know. Because I really don't really know until I wake up in the morning around 8 a.m. Eastern time what's going on. Because obviously overseas has a lot to do with it. And obviously there's been a lot of news after hours and until the market opens up until 9:30. So I kind of do a lot of my pre-market trading, knowing what I'm going to get into it before I start getting into it, but I get into when the market opens up. But I'm pretty much in cash. I close out all my positions at the end of the day.
Oh, we know that. You teach it. You know, for those of you who haven't heard Fausto before, I tell this story all the time. And in one of his classes, he says, there's an area in the class that says, a slide comes up and says, there is rule number one and the rule that you have to obey, no overnight holds. And it's listed like 10 times and you got to repeat it back to him.
Right.
No over, does it matter if you're down 50% on the trade? No overnight holds. End of sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So you still live by that, I guess, right?
It's always, I've been living through that. And you know what? It takes some time for you to realize going through it, to obey it, because we all live through it, and we don't. And if you like to sleep at night, and you want to keep the hair on your head,
yeah, sleeping's overrated.
And these prices, I mean, listen, people realize it. You know, and we've been doing these podcasts for a long time. I know you listeners have heard me in the past, because I've been doing this for years with you. But I mean, when we were talking about the rally that we had, I mean, we haven't been down, we haven't had a crash in the market. Remember, we went from 14,000 down to 6,000. Right. We went down almost 60%. I mean, with a big crash, you have one of the biggest rallies. We talked about this in 1936. You had a big rally after the 1929 crash. I mean, for crying out loud, we went from 6,600 to 10,000. You don't think there's going to be profit-taking?
No, absolutely. And then the question is going to be, you know, how much profit-taking? You know, right now, the rule of thumb has been on a daily basis on for a broad-based trader that you look at the 50-day averages. When you bounce off the 50-day average, you come right back up. This has been the first time, although we'll have to see in the next few days, but this is the first time that we've seen this kind of situation where we hit the 50-day, and then it went up, and then it came down pretty hard the next day. I think that has to do with a lot of the end-of-quarter mutual fund issue and reallocating, although today is kind of a little bit of a mystery. This week, I should say, is a little bit of a mystery that why we've seen such a dramatic change throughout the week. You would have seen a little bit more stability. So when you look at, you know, this week and you look at last week, there was some kind of interesting things that went on there, but I agree with you. But again, as a day trader now, so I want to get back to that. As a day trader, you know, I know, look at like what's the most liquid stocks, what's trading the most. Does it have to do with earnings? I mean, what are you looking at? Like the first thing, the top 10s, 20, what are you looking at?
You hit the nail right in the head. The first thing I do is I just look right through the top 20. A lot of people always ask me, do you research the day before? And I said, absolutely not. I want to go and play with my kids. I'm done. I'm tired. My brain's shot. I don't have time to analyze it because whatever happened, you know, whatever I could prepare the day before might not be volatile tomorrow. So I wait till coming in the morning. I go through my top 20 list. And it's very important that you do this. You default it by percentage, not by points, because then you see the most expensive stocks. Go through that, see what stocks have some volume in it, work, and you'll see stocks 20, 30% up, 30, 40% down, and trade that volatility. I mean, because obviously you're going to get bounces, you'll do some bottom fishing, you'll get some breakouts. Then I'll look at the chart and see, well, why is the stock really down? Was it because the stock has got crushed the last couple of days, or you know, maybe fuel's starting to average down. Andrew, I don't really care what the companies do. I never even know what they do. I don't know why they're down. I don't know why they're up. All I care about is that number. That number's got the percentage. It's moving in the market. Fausto Puglisi, Cybertrading University students, and traders are going to be trading it because we're here to make a day's pay, and we just take what we can get out of the market.
Right. That's the thing. The difference is between investing and trading like you do is in the same genre of in stocks and in the markets and all that. But you're looking at things like, okay, this is down 25%. How much lower does it have to go? What's my risk on the downside? Which you could expand to a daily basis too, of course. I mean, you can look at this on a longer term. You know, you can look at this over time and say, okay, the same principles you use in a way on a day trade could be expanded if you want to do it for, let's say, over a swing trade. You know, you're looking at support resistance, you're looking at opportunity, you're looking at downside risk, you're looking at where something, you know, can go, what's my worst case scenario, what's my base case scenario, where's my profit line? You could kind of expand that, right?
You can expand it, and not only that, but a lot of people don't probably know this, but almost every trader on Wall Street is a day trader.
Right.
You know, because that's what they're doing at the end of the day. The only positions that they're holding are mutual funds or people like yourself that are investors. So most of them are pretty much day trading. But one thing that you will learn as being as a day trader, even if you're saying it's not for you, just educating yourself the whole concept of what it is will make you that much better of a swing trader, an investor, an options trader, you know, because it's discipline. It teaches you a little bit, a lot more discipline,
right,
and how to be more involved in what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the reasons why you took my class and why you, even though you were very good at what you do already, you know, your goal is, well, you know, obviously, no, you never knew the day trading aspect, and that's why you basically took my course when you did, which obviously helped you become a lot better at what you do today.
Right. So I know this may be an overused and over-discussed issue, but talk to me a little bit about flash trading and if it has any effect on what you do or not, and some of, you know, the automation that's out there, the algorithms. I mean, does that change how you look at things?
You know, it's kind of hard to kind of teach flash trading and try to explain it. Other than for some people don't know what it is that, you know, they'll post offers and they'll cancel it, and they'll post it, and they'll cancel it. You know, they try to sucker in buyers and sellers. They'll do a lot of flashing in and out, but it's kind of hard to kind of explain the terminology behind it, you know, other than to see it, other than And for most people out there, I think it's more minuscule, I would say.
Than what's going on in today's market. I just find that, you know, with some of this is stopping, or if it's going to be stopped, I wonder what the effects are going to be on liquidity issues. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I just wonder what's going to be the longer-term effect of that. We'll see, I guess. So
We'll see. But you know what? They don't really do that much of that other than the middle of the day, and that's why most people, you know, they think that when I teach my classes, Andrew, and you know this, I only teach the first hour and the last hour of the close because that's where the market is the most extreme volatile. What happens, they'll do a lot of flashing. They'll play a lot more head fakes and do those in the middle of the day, which most times people wait to trade because that, they think that's the most calmest time to do it, and that's when they get caught in the wrong side.
Right, exactly. All right, Fausto Puglisi, it's a pleasure spending time with you. And as always, I encourage everybody to check out cybertrading.com. I know I have a class coming up?
That's right, Andrew. Cybertrade University, we do education for a lot of brokerage firms. We got Andrew that's going to be coming on next week.
Is it next week?
What happened?
Maybe it's the 17th. I was giving a hoot to myself. Nothing happened. I was like, woo!
I think it's the 17th. And I think you're coming on. You're going to be doing a whole speaking and an educational course about investing and what you do. And it's nice because a lot of people don't realize it, that they get to see what it's like in the real live market conditions. They get to see how these things go up, how they go down. They get to see, you know, hear you speak. They get to show you in a PowerPoint presentation and some live trading. And that including I will be there also doing an event and showing people me trading live in the market. So you could find us on Andrew Horowitz's website. Look at his good looking face on the right.
The beauty,
or just
that,
visit our website.
Beauty, yeah. I'll put a link on that. I'll put a link on there so people can check it out. That's all.
And then they'll register for it, and we'll get them.
That's a freebie, right?
It's cheap. It's very.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's the best trade you can make.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Fausto Puglisi, Cyber Trading University. You are the main man. You are my favorite trader. You are my mentor. I really appreciate you stopping by and spending time with us here today on, you know what, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you soon, buddy.
Thanks for having me again.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. I love that guy. He's great, Fausto. I also wanted to, before we left today, I wanted to talk to you about Jeremy Grantham. I tried to get him on the show. He's a money manager, and he's been writing these wonderful quarterly letters that you can get. Usually, it's available online. He lets it out to everybody. We actually started just having our quarterly letters out to clients only, but we'll put some information. As a matter of fact, I'll put a link up there so you can see part of it on the quarterly letter that we write. And you should check that out if you want any more information about that. You'll be able to find out where to get it. But he writes a nice piece on here, and it's called Just Desserts and Markets Being Silly Again. And he talks about things, I got to tell you something, he doesn't hold back any punches here, none, not at all. And he talks about the Teflon man like Larry Summers, who with a Financial Times bully pulpit has done little bullying and blown no warning whistles and impending doom back in 2007 and 2006, and then famously in his earlier Treasury years as a Treasury Secretary. Timothy Geithner, in turn, sat in the very engine room of the USS Disaster and helped steer her onto the rocks. And there are several others that you know about. And you know who, all of them were promoted. But he also talks about some of the things that are happening in these market conditions. And I thought it was really interesting that he started talking about, let me get to the spot here because it was really interesting. Talking about some of the outlook of what's happening, our lessons not learned. Are redesigning our current financial system, where technically it hasn't been redesigned. Obviously, nothing's changed of late with that. And he talks about the reckless home building that's gone on of recently. But he talks about this is interesting, overspending and undersavers. He says the total debt to GDP ratio, which is under our hero Greenspan's and Bernanke, rose from 1.25 times GDP to 3.25 times, in other words, the debt. Without even counting our Social Security and Medicare commitments. That's a big number. This has continued to climb as growing government debt more than offsets falling consumer debt. Where, one wonders, does this end, and how will and with how much grief? Interesting. Then he talks about some overpaid people here. Here's what's really interesting, though. The world's most over-vehicled country. This is his 11th point here, and this is probably one of my favorites. He talks about, we chew up a dangerously large amount of Middle Eastern oil and oil desperately squeezed from Canadian tar sands, which is ruinous for our global political well-being and ability to avoid war, and also not so good for an overheating world. So the answer must be to subsidize more car purchases, and when the subsidies run out, you can have all the fun again. Good long-term thinking. You know, that ties into the whole concept of what is going on with this GDP. You know, we talked about this earlier, but the cash for clunkers is an Edmunds discussion, Edmunds.com, that talks about that each cash for clunkers car actually costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $24,000 per car to the taxpayer. Now, I have to go back and read some more about this because I read it once and I kind of scratched my head about this. I know I said, wait a minute, I thought it's supposed to be $4,500. How is it now $24,000? That's a big number. Well, they go through all the analysis of this and they show how that is. The White House obviously get hold of this, and on their blogging website, the White House has a blogging website, the White House, I guess, .gov, they countered this and said it didn't, you know, have that effect, and it's been very helpful, it added to GDP, etc. You know, I understand it adds to GDP, and if that's all we're looking for is just the numbers. And then we have the other thing that happened this week, which is a discussion that came out of Washington that the stimulus plan saved or created, again, saved or created, remember that for a second, 675,000 jobs. But my recollection was that this stimulus plan was supposed to, yes, you guessed it, save or create 4 million jobs. Now, if in fact the stimulus plan is halfway spent at this point, shouldn't we have 2 million jobs that were saved? Now, you have to remember some tricky lines here. Saved or created. Do you remember that? Every single time a politician these days, especially on the Democratic side, which is fine, I'm not calling party lines here, but talks about the job situation and employment and the stimulus, they talk about it in the, with the encapsulated in, it's going to save or create X amount of jobs. That's what it's designed for. Why would they say it that way? Well, create, we know, create means they create jobs. Why would they use the word saved? I think it's simple. You can't quantify that. You can't tell how much that actually saved. How do you know how many jobs it really, quote unquote, saved? Can you find out how many people weren't going to be fired? How do you know that? So I think this is a real nebulous argument that talks about how, you know, this creation or saving. But even if it was a good argument, we're still only at supposedly 675,000. That is not enough. It is not enough to create an ongoing growth situation for our economy. It is not enough to boost the world economy, which we're so integrated with. So while we may have an inventory restocking cycle and we may be looking at, you know, a marvelous time ahead in terms of, you know, opportunity sometime in the future and the stimulus, but you know what? We have to really wonder how much this unemployment situation is going to hurt us, because so many people have talked about for so long the whole issue of the employment situation as being a lagging indicator. Whether it's lagging, coincident, or leading, I don't care. It's an indicator nonetheless, and that needs to be paid attention to at these levels because they're absurd. You know that. So where are we going from here? Well, we did, I told you, to hedge a bit of our portfolios. We have a bunch of cash right now, and actually we had a good month this month. Markets were down pretty ugly. We were up this month at TDI Managed Growth. If you want to check out, of course, the what we do, how we do it, there is a trial, a virtual tour, if you will. We also have a trial, so you can check out our website. But we have a virtual tour available. I'll put a link on the website as well. And all the other things we talked about today will be referenced on the TDI website as well. I encourage you to go there. It's the Disciplined Investor, TDI, the Disciplined Investor.com, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And all of the things are there. Show notes, just click that on the top right. It says show notes. And you'll find all the information about today's show and the links to the different places, et cetera. You can follow the things that we're reading. I put that there. Follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, and of course on Facebook if you want. Befriend me. I'll friend you back. And then we can find out more what's going on. You get instant updates of everything that's going on here. You would have known about our short on WIN. We would have known of when we covered it. You would have known about all the things that we're doing here, the indicators that we're watching. It comes right through a Twitter feed. So check it out. Until next time, I think that you need to kind of watch things. Right now, we're not making any major purchases. We're kind of looking back and looking at what's going on and seeing, okay, markets are concerning. We may add a couple of positions that are oversold here, but we're being very, very careful in the areas we actually invest right now, because it's a very, very, very interesting time and you have to be careful. Opportunities are abound, both short and long, But you need to do it in a disciplined manner and be safe. Be safe from your own greed, your own fear, and that just requires a little discipline. That's what you're here for, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Episode number 133 coming to an end. Happy Halloween. Have a great week. Looking forward to a great November. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.